And, you know, and Colin Kaepernick is not even in the league. He's been effectively blackballed by the owners. There are a few isolated people taking knees maybe here or there. A couple of them have talked about, well, they're only going to do it another game or two. And yet he gets up and just in, you know, really vitriolic terms, I mean, a striking terms for a president of the United States, I mean, cursing, you know, goes after them and goes after Colin Kaepernick like he was, you know, Osama bin Laden or something. I mean, it was a quite remarkable moment. And I personally think there's sort of no way to deal with that, with the kind of the why, without looking at race.
Was he under the impression that, that these athletes in these leagues wouldn't fight back?
You know, I think for I mean, one of the intriguing things about watching Trump is that, in a sense, if they fight, I mean, he's very good at sort of in the way of almost like a classic bully in knowing who to pick a fight with. So, fine, you know, LeBron James comes back at him, Steph Curry comes back at him, a lot of football players, obviously, the next Sunday take a knee. The vast majority of those players who did that were black. That's most distinctly not part of his base, and he clearly saw it as, I think the surest sign that he saw it as a winner is that he kept talking about it all week. So, I mean, in other words, it's kind of like, fine, you know, fine, you keep coming at me. That not only doesn't hurt me with my base, it helps me with my base.
Now, he's focused his criticism and attacks on the NBA and the National Football League. Am I oversimplifying if I say, well, that's because people of color make up the large percentage of athletes in those leagues?
I mean, I think it's the inescapable, to my view, kind of a conclusion there. I mean, the NFL is about 78% black. The NBA is a similar percentage. And certainly in the NFL, if you look at the players taking knees, I think with one or two exceptions, it's entirely African-American. So, yeah, I mean, I give the president credit. I think he knows exactly the kind of fight he was picking, and he was very pleased to do so.
Now, it's ironic that a number of those NFL owners were people who contributed to his campaign, but people like Sadiq Khan were out there with their players, and even Bob Kraft, maybe his closest friend in all of professional sports, while not quite as vehement, at least had a critical message about what the president had done.
That's right, and I mean, and I guess, you know, and so credit is due those owners, albeit, obviously, I mean, they have which isn't to say it's dishonorable, but I mean, they have a business calculation. You know, he's gone after basically the majority of their on-field workforce. And so you either make a decision that you're going to stand by them, or you really risk a fracture within your workforce. And if you jump around a little, you go back a couple years ago in the NBA when Sterling, the owner of the Clippers, was caught on a recording making racist remarks, and his players on the Clippers, as I recall, in the playoffs, actually said, we won't take the floor if the league doesn't do something, and the league did something in very short order. So, I mean, these, you know, again, it's not to say that the owners in the NFL operated out of dishonorable reason, but they just, you know, were self-interested.
We're talking with Michael Powell of the New York Times. Is it possible that he calculated this, the president, well enough to understand that this thing would be simplified, all complexity would be drained from it, and it would become purely about people saying, do you respect the flag or do you not?
Right. I mean, and it is interesting the extent. I mean, I've seen this, frankly, in the emails and others that I've received. I mean, if you kind of press certain hot buttons with folks, it can be very effective. And I mean, and again, if you look at Trump going back to the Republican primary, where he kind of would sort of surgically pick out in his Republican opponents, you know, what he saw as kind of their personality vulnerability, he is very good at that. I mean, he's always done that. He did that as a businessman. And, you know, so I guess in a perverse way, I would give him props. He's a very good bully.
I hear a lot of people say, and I'm sure you have too, I just want to keep sports out of politics. Let us have our games without these distractions. But they're conveniently forgetting that sports and politics have been tied pretty tightly together, probably since the beginning of organized sports, and certainly Jackie Robinson, John Carlos, who we had on the show earlier today, Billie Jean King, the military flyovers that the government paid for as recruiting during NFL games. This is nothing new.
No, precisely. And actually, one of the things that I've found fascinating in, I guess, the 3 years that I've been writing a sports column is the way in which, you know, to the credit really of many fans, you can have discussions about race, about class, about women in sports in ways that are actually quite profound and intense, and in ways in which, you know, frankly, if we were to have this discussion about something, you know, in politics, would be much harder to talk about this. So, in a way, good. I mean, he's brought up some of these issues, and that's an interesting discussion to have. You know, so I think that, you know, it's awfully hard. I mean, sports reflects the society we in. It reflects the imperfections of that society. It reflects some of the advances of that society. You know, in a sense, that part of the discussion, that little part, is probably a good thing.
Man, as you said, he knows exactly who he's playing to, what his audience is. But as you point out in your piece in the Times, these athletes are pretty smart, too, and they held their tongue for a while, but this is not a group that's likely to take this, sitting down, lying down, or on a knee. They're going to respond, and they also know that they're pretty popular, too.
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, one of the fascinating aspects for the last, say, 10 years in both, certainly in the NBA and increasingly in the NFL, is to see these athletes starting to realize that, you know, they are celebrities, they're leaders in their own way. And you've seen with some of the athletes, LeBron James certainly comes to mind, a real willingness to kind of engage with issues from voter registration to even endorsing candidates to, you know, to talking about race, to talking about class. And I think that's all, I mean, that's terrific. I think back to Michael Jordan, who was, you know, seemingly too, I don't know, he put the commercial aspects of his life kind of over any other and wouldn't touch politics. And I think what's kind of refreshing is to see these young men, again, whether you agree on every issue or not, seems to me almost irrelevant, trying to kind of wrestle with this stuff in an interesting way. And I think that's actually at times kind of moving.
Where do we go from here, Michael? And has the president framed this whole discussion in such a way that whatever happens, whether it's joining arms or standing respectfully, whatever people choose to do, has he framed it in such a way that he can say he won this?
You know, that's a great question, and I don't know. I mean, a lot's going to depend, I think, what happens this coming Sunday and in Sundays after that in the NFL. In the NBA, I think it's quite clear that players are, because it's been much more at the kind of cutting edge of the intersections of sort of politics, society, and culture. And the NBA, these guys have been very willing to kind of take on these discussions. The NFL, it's been a different thing. And the NFL, of course, is our biggest, most powerful sport. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, and I think what we're going to have to kind of see what happens in coming weeks. But it's certainly Trump has called the question, right? I mean, you know, players now kind of have to decide what they're going to do, what they kind of think about police brutality, about a lot of these issues that Kaepernick surfaced a year ago.
It's interesting, too, that NBA coaches, the Greg Popoviches, the Steve Kerrs of the world have been much more outspoken. Is that the nature of the league? Is it the nature of the players of that league, or just those individuals?
You know, that's, I think, a good question, and it has. I've been struck by that as well. I think it's fair to say the NBA is the most sort of, has been the most racially progressive league for some time, tends to attract personalities that are probably somewhat more liberal in their politics, that are certainly very comfortable with a intimate interracial dynamic. Certainly you've seen that with both Popovich and Kerr, both white, you know, who coach teams that are, majority black, and, you know, in the case of Popovich, from all over the world. And the NFL has always, has traditionally been the most conservative of the major American sports, with the possible exception of hockey. But I don't know that you'd put hockey, I don't think hockey's quite in that, you know, the cosmos with the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the NBA. And I think the NFL is a different can of worms, and that's why I say it'll be interesting. You're right. Coaches have really not spoken out there in the same way that Popovich and Kerr have in the basketball league.
Away from this story before we let you go, the college basketball story that has broken this week has resulted in Rick Pitino out of the game. This sounds like it's just the tip of the iceberg. Does this have the potential to be one of the biggest sports stories in recent memory?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think that, look, when the minute the prosecutor came out at the beginning of this past week and said, you know, it's a criminal complaint, and it's sort of a legal technicality, but it was, you could see the game right there. When you're ready, you know, when you're ready to bring an indictment, it means you've gone to a grand jury, and you're saying you committed X, Y, and Z crimes. The complaint is kind of a murkier world where you're basically saying, here's the conspiracy I found. It's a real big one. We've found that these assistant coaches committed crimes. And basically, as several prosecutors said to me, what it does is it kind of sets up a come-to-God moment for a bunch of the coaches. Because coaches, if they feel like they're, you know, or institutions, say Louisville, which appears to have just pushed out Pitino, if they feel that they're in the crosshairs, that criminal complaint, it was kind of a you know, come on in and talk to me, folks. And I think this could be huge. I mean, it really is. It's like somebody dug up all the ugly piping of the way recruiting works in college sports. And I am sure, frankly, it's not just basketball. I mean, I'm sure if you look at college football, you're going to find similar things. So it's, I think this one is, this one's going to shake up a lot of people.
And it's a lot different when the feds come knocking at your door as opposed to just the NCAA.
Precisely. I mean, and that's always been, of course, the pattern in the past is, okay, you get your wrist slapped, maybe you'd missed the NCAA playoffs for a couple of years, and then kind of you go back to business as usual. This is saying you committed a fraud upon these institutions. Now, I will add the kind of funny thing here is, I mean, you know, there is an element of what's the old, you know, the old movie Casablanca, where the, you know, the inspector is shocked to find gambling. The idea that the presidents of some of these major, you know, universities, whether it's Louisville or North Carolina or whatever, that they wouldn't have known anything about this, and they just, you know, these shoe companies just happen to give them gigantic $1 million contracts and everything. You know, it's a funny sort of fraud that's been committed, and you might say that it's one that probably a lot of people have been party to, even if maybe the way they're party to it is by closing their eyes.
And much like in Casablanca, round up the usual suspects.
Yes, precisely. Right.
Michael, it's great to talk with you. As always, we appreciate you coming back on the show with us, and we look forward to talking with you again sometime soon.
Thank you. I enjoy it always.
That's Michael Powell of the New York Times with us here on Downtown.